A few months ago, a number of people in TBC felt that it was time to share the vision that God has put on our heart as a collective and to try to communicate it across our members and also to share with friends of TBC. So here it is. It's our vision for next year and for the next few years. The interesting thing is that the vision that we have, if you look back at the apostolic calling that drew us out in the first place, it's actually very, very similar in terms of its heartbeat. So the kingdom vision that we feel that God is giving us is to bless and renew the suburbs of Hobart by building an extended family of disciples who make disciples, leaders who train leaders, and communities who birth communities. Now, look, the wording's not perfect, but the heartbeat is basically there. And this presentation will explain some of the principles behind this vision. So I'm going to start off with a story, and it's a story from a long time ago in India. So there was a king in India, and he wanted to reward a wise man who had provided great advice to him over many, many years, having provided wise service and advice. And so the king insisted basically that the wise man received a reward, and the wise man kept refusing and said that service was his only reward. But on the insistence of the king, who was getting angry at the wise man's refusal to accept some type of reward for his service, he gave in and looked at a chessboard in the corner and said, "Okay, well, this is the reward I would like. I would like you to put one grain of rice, or wheat, as in this picture, but one grain of rice on the first square of the chessboard. And then the next day, I would like you to double that and give me two grains of rice. The next day, four grains, the next day, eight grains, then 16, 32, etc., until you get to the 64th square of the chessboard, in which case my reward will be have paid in full." Now, the king was unsure of exactly how much rice that would be. He knew it would be a number of bags, but he thought that was quite a reasonable and interesting, if not strange, request from the wise man, and said yes. And so that's what happened. One grain the first day, two grains a second, multiplying and doubling each time, four grains, eight grains. The interesting thing is that soon became 1 kilogram of rice, 2 kilograms of rice, 4 kilograms, and then one bag, then 1 ton, 2 tons, 3, 4 tons, 8 tons of rice. What was interesting is by the 32nd square, there were many, many, many bags and carts of rice. And that was only halfway across the chessboard. So when the king started to realize his mistake, he got the royal mathematicians in to look at the maths and find out how much rice he had actually promised the wise man. And a total of 64 squares was 274,877,960,944 tons of rice, which, to put it in context, is enough rice to cover the entire surface area of India to a depth of 15 meters high. Or if laid end to end, it would be enough rice to go out of the Earth, past the solar system, to Alpha Centauri, then back to Earth, back to Alpha Centauri, and then all the way back to Earth again. So that is the power and the principle of multiplication, which forms the heartbeat of the vision that we feel God is giving us, that things begin extremely slowly, that small is big and slow is fast, and that spiritual principle is a missional one that can help us to bring about transformation and change in the people and the suburbs of Hobart. So this isn't just a theoretical story. You see the principle of multiplication all the way through the Gospels. So in Matthew chapter 13, we have the parable of the sower, where Jesus talked about the man who scattered seed. Some fell on the path, some fell on rocks, some in shallow soil, some among thorns. But the seed that was in good soil produced a crop 160 or 30 times what was sown. It's multiplication. Similarly, there's the feeding of the 5,000 in Matthew chapter 14. So the disciples had only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, a tiny, tiny quantity for the multitudes that had been following Jesus around. Now the disciples wanted to send the people home, but Jesus gave thanks. He gave the food to God and then gave the food to his disciples to distribute. and told them to give it to the people, and the food multiplied. And afterwards, everyone ate and was satisfied, and there was 12 basketfuls of broken pieces left over after feeding 5,000 men plus women and children. So the kingdom of God doesn't grow, it doesn't add, it multiplies. It's a kingdom principle. Now, if we look at the rise of the Christianity in the New Testament times and in the Roman Empire, so these stats come from Rodney Stark, who is a sociologist, a non-Christian sociologist, who looked at the rise of Christianity and tried to understand the principles that enabled Christianity to go from a persecuted backwards minority in a backwards empire to become the religion of the greatest empire. And so this is the stats. So basically at the year 440, Rodney Stark suggested there was about 1,000 Christians. Now they multiplied by 40% every decade. And then, so by the year 100, there were still only 7,530 Christians. Then 40,000, 217,000. But what you see and what you noticed is very, very quickly with multiplication, once you hit that exponential curve, you start to shoot up and you start to see a massive, massive impact. So it's almost like Christianity was completely negligible in terms of numbers, and then suddenly there was this explosion to the point where 40 to 50% of the Roman Empire ended up being Christian by the time it became a legalized religion near 400 AD. The interesting thing is nothing changed. The DNA of the gospel and the DNA of multiplication was there right at the beginning. The multiplication and the doubling happened just like that grain of wheat or the grain of rice. But there came a point, an inflection point, where things started to look very, very different. And that's the power of it. Similarly, India, and in AD 1998, so in recent history, these are some stats from City Team, who have done some amazing work in India and Bangladesh and now in Africa. And so they used to plant about 2 churches a year, but then they realized that multiplication wasn't at the heartbeat of what they were doing. So they changed what they were doing and they said, what if we just invested in 5 people that God revealed to us, 5 Indians? And they invested heavily in these men and women of God for 2 years and basically discipled them the way Jesus discipled people. Nothing happened the first year. Nothing happened the second year. No churches were planted except those 5 people started to disciple 5 other people each. In the year 2000, they planted 8 churches, then 148, then 327, and the stats become quite extraordinary. In a similar way, these are the numbers. You see the same type of multiplication at 40% and the same type of J curve, starting slow, slow being fast and small being big, because of disciples who made disciples who made disciples. We see this again in China with the T for T movement and the multiplication of the church after Mao Zedong. We see it in Africa and we see it in other places around the world, which is really exciting, except we don't yet see it in the West. My question is it possible for God to renew our city? Now, there are 67 suburbs in Greater Hobart. What if, through multiplying disciples who make disciples and leaders who train leaders and eventually extended families of people who love God who multiply into other communities, what if it was possible to see the same type of transformation of our suburbs? Now, just this is a hypothetical example, but and the context is different. So let's suggest that it's possible, and I think it is, to multiply each missional community every 3 years. If that was the case, now given our context, which is hard missionally, it's we're a pluralist society, highly individualistic, highly affluent, and highly resistant to the gospel and to the Christian faith. And most importantly, we don't have family and extended family connections which enable the spread of the gospel in terms of mission and discipleship. But even with that, I think it's possible to multiply and double a missional community every 3 years. If that's the case, we have 1 missional community today. Next year, we'll have 2 with Risdon Vale and ourselves. If we had 3 in 2019 and then doubled it every 3 years, then it's quite possible within 18 years, by pure maths, and obviously by the grace of God, to see a similar inflection curve. Now, I've got the 180 circled, because for TPC, there's something, you know, critical mass in terms of numbers makes a big difference. And often at about the 200 mark, churches start to gain a critical mass when added with momentum that allows things to speed up. My assumption is that nothing will change in 18 years, which I don't think is true in terms of affluence and peace and government. But and the last thing is the 96 is where, you know, there would be everyone, ideally in Hobart and Greater Hobart, would have access in some way to a missional community that would connect in some way to where they live or to who they are as people. And again, you see this slow start, this almost minute, hardly able to see a start, and then it increases. Now, here we have a principle of multiplication that everything we do, from the way we disciple, to the way we train leaders, to the way we teach, to the way we gather, to the way we do communion, needs to be reproducible if we are to see this type of transformation of our cities. So this, you know, this is a great picture of four generations of a child, of his parent, grandparent, and then great-grandparent. And I love this picture again of this child with four fingers. So everything we need to do needs to be reproducible to the great-grandparent level. So much of what we've seen in terms of Western Christianity has been highly skilled, highly trained leaders, pastors, ministers, who then pass on their high training to, let's say, the next generation. And you can create great services, great sermons. You can invest really heavily and raise up leaders. But those leaders need to be able to do it in the same way that the next generation can do it to the next generation, so that what you see in the fourth generation looks identical and is as reproducible as the first generation. So if we have excellence and perfection and great leaders that don't do things in a reproducible, in a simple and multiplicable way, then we kill multiplication and we stop this thing from happening. So we believe that everything we need to do needs to be simple and reproducible to the fourth generation. And that is the measure of success. And we think that's what we see in the Gospels, and that's what we see in the New Testament, and that's what we see in the Epistles. Moving on to TPC, just a bit of a description of our logo. So our logo has this kind of idea of discipleship and mission and community embedded in it. We see three interconnected circles. So in that sense, it's networked in structure. We see a gathered and a scattered, a centralized and decentralized kind of extended family look, where the circles are connected, but they're also separate. We are apostolic in nature, and that's that circle on the right-hand side, which is disconnected, but being shot out as a result of the ministries of TPC. So we never want to hold and keep everything to ourselves. We want to be able to bless and release new people, new things, disciple makers, trainers, churches, even if they don't come back and become a part of us. And we also are discipleship centric. Each circle or hub, so to speak, has a red center, which I like, because, you know, red being the color of blood, the color of Christ-likeness, of self sacrifice and denial. But each circle is discipleship centric, where people are hearing and obeying God as a foundational activity, and at the same time welcoming anyone who is wanting to belong to community before they believe. So that goes back to our apostolic roots, and the logo still connects with where God is calling us as a people. We're coming into land. So the kingdom vision again is to bless and renew the suburbs of Hobart by building an extended family of disciples who make disciples, leaders who train leaders, and communities who birth communities. Now I'll just move towards the finishing by talking about this great concept called a BAG, or a BHAG, which business authors, Jim Collins, he names a BHAG as a big, hairy, audacious goal, and suggests that organizations that are visionary in nature have these big, hairy, audacious goals that are almost crazy in the sense of they're seemingly impossible, but they're crystal clear to understand. You know, we'd love to see a missional community in every suburb, or where every person in Hobart could access an extended family who love Jesus. A big, hairy, audacious goal. The people in the organization are committed, and it drives us. And we also believe it's possible, even though everyone else outside of, you know, the organizations in terms of business will actually laugh and mock people who actually state these goals. And so we'd love to put this idea out there and to express that obviously these are kingdom principles. You will see BHAGs or visions with Noah, build an ark in the middle of the desert where there's no water and do it for your entire lifetime while people laugh at you until of course the storm comes. Moses, you know, you're a shepherd, you've been exiled from the most powerful country in the land, and God says go with a stutter and tell Pharaoh to let my people go. Well, we know the result of God's revelation. Then there's Solomon and David build the temple, and you see the stories of the people rallied around this idea, and they brought all their skills, they brought their materials, they brought their gold, they brought their jewels, and in the end there was so much that Solomon had to say, please stop bringing resources because we have enough to build the temple. And similarly, you've got Nehemiah, this crazy idea of rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem when surrounded by enemies who want you killed. Now, the difference between a big, hairy, audacious goal and a vision from God is that it obviously centers around Jesus, and it's through revelation. I mean, Jesus is our ultimate example. You know, I will destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, and that's exactly what he did to transform the world and to transform humankind. So I suppose the question we need to ask ourselves is it a revelation and does it come from God? So just a bit of a reminder of scripture. It's God who builds his church. There's nothing we do to build it. I am the vine, you're the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing, nothing. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the guards stand watch in vain. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. So despite this kind of great vision and this great goal that we'd love to go for, at the same time, we're quite aware that God builds his church. And we can't control the outcomes, but we do want to be faithful with what we believe God is calling us as a community to do, and to reach out and to bless the people of Hobart who we love and work and live amongst. And ultimately, it's not about multiplication. It's not about getting bigger. It's not about claiming new ground. It is actually about loving God with everything we have. And it's about loving people. But we believe the way to do that is to follow Jesus and make disciples who look and act like him who make disciples, to train leaders who train leaders, and to birth communities of mission and discipleship that multiply again and again, transforming suburbs all around us. So a question I'd love to finish with for this part of the talk is this vision from God? Something we need to be praying about. We need to be listening to what God is saying in both scripture and revelation through the Spirit and through the Word. And I ask you, if you're not part of TPC and you're hearing this talk, to please partner with us in prayer and pray that we will be bold enough and faithful enough to do the things we feel God calling us to do, and in the will of God that we will bear much fruit.